Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Web Sleuth Radio, where each week we tackle true crime cases, and each week I usually have some embarrassing moment of technical difficulty that makes me want to eat my own weight in spam. Truly a deep psychological problem, and perhaps our guest tonight can help me with it. Tonight we have a very interesting guest indeed, psychiatrist and author Dr. Keith Abloh. Dr. Abloh will join us in just a moment to discuss his new book, Inside the Mind of Casey Anthony. And later I'll introduce you to a group called Justice for Shelley. You'll be very impressed with the young people who've put together Justice for Shelley, trust me. But first, Web Sleuth Radio is brought to you by a wonderful organization called DreamCatchersForAbusedChildren.com. This is a nonprofit organization where their mission is to educate the public on child abuse symptoms, interventions, and preventions. Visit them at DreamCatchersForAbusedChildren.com. Also joining us is Kim Sturr, our executive producer, co-host, and corporate security liaison, and she'll be here to help us with all kinds of technical issues. You can also call in with a question for Dr. Keith Abloh at 760-825-0933, or you can join us in our chat room on blogtalkradio.com/websleuths. Welcome, Dr. Keith Abloh. Thank you so much for joining us on Web Sleuths Radio.
That's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You bet. I've wanted you to come on for quite a long time. And Dr. Abloh, you wrote a fascinating book a few years ago called Inside the Mind of Scott Peterson. And as I told you over the phone, I practically memorized that book because it truly was a deep look into how a childhood and how situations in people's lives and their parents' and grandparents' lives can snowball out of control and lead up to a situation like the death and the murder of Lacey Peterson. Now, in your latest book, Inside the Mind of Casey Anthony, let's talk about this connection here, okay? You point out the connection to children being ripped from their parents' arms and raised without the love and security they need. You connect these like to the death of Lacey Peterson and Kaylee Anthony. Now, in the Peterson case, it was Scott's mother. She was raised in an orphanage. And in Casey's case, her grandfather, if I'm not mistaken, Cindy's father, was raised in an orphanage. Can you please, I know we're limited on time and I'm asking you to really condense it here, but can you please explain how all of this connects and leads up to these murders?
Well, ultimately, children need to be recognized as human beings. They need their personhood affirmed in order to develop regard for themselves and regard for anyone else. They also need to be not suffering so much that they cut off all capacity to feel for others, and that including themselves, by the way, to avoid their pain. But it extends to others where they can't resonate, they don't show empathy. And so for both Casey Anthony and for Scott Peterson, having developed in families that essentially showed them no status, gave them no status as people, they essentially retreated to an internal world with which they had very little communication, but which was filled with rage and humiliation. And those are feelings that can get tapped at moments in people's lives where they feel like their backs are against the wall. Those are those moments that tap the inner cauldron of emotion that has been created because these kids, then adolescents and young adults, can't go near their really dark feelings at all, lest they dissolve into them. But they carry them with them. And then at a critical moment, when a perfect storm of variables descends upon them or collects around them, they do the unspeakable.
Like has happened in these cases. So let's take Cindy's father, for instance. In your book, you have found out that he was taken away from his parents. His mother died, and he was put in an orphanage, and he was kind of a cold person, and so was her mother, but her mother was the disciplinarian. So and Cindy was the baby of the family, of a family of boys. And you did talk to Cindy's brother, Rick, I believe. And explain that dynamic. What created Cindy? How did her father, being in an orphanage, and the type of woman that he married, create Cindy Anthony?
Well, these are psychological theories, but I think this one's very compelling. It's not just that Cindy Anthony's dad grew up in an orphanage. He grew up in an orphanage when he was placed there by his father. His mom having passed away, his dad decided, I can't raise these kids alone. And so he places the children in an orphanage. So men in the family come off looking not so reliable. But it would be one thing if it were one dose of that perspective. But Cindy Anthony's mother, Shirley, was also a product of a family that had been raised destitute because her father, Stiles, decided to run off with another woman and leave the kids with no support. So you have two people coming together, Alexander Palacia and Shirley Palacia, who both, deep in their cores, may have believed that men aren't really a trusted reservoir. They're to be diminished. And who does Cindy Anthony marry? Well, someone whom she can control completely, George Anthony. Somebody who, for his own reasons, doesn't look to be a very substantial character, who is manipulatable, and she ascends to an incredible position of power in her family, a complete position of authority, with all the control. No more will these generations be subject, one might say, if you were speaking for Cindy Anthony, theoretically. No more will anyone else be relied upon to make decisions. After all, she'd come from a family where even her siblings, again, all male siblings, had called her princess, resented the special attention that she got, resented the fact that her parents and theirs had a little more money around and could bestow upon her special gifts. And so nobody really gave, perhaps, Cindy Anthony a fair shake. But once she's running a family, she's running it. And she's absorbing all the emotional oxygen in that family. Nobody can have a full life or a complete self, I don't think, in her presence. That's what I concluded. But it's hyperbolic. So
right.
Literally, her daughter has no interior self while developing. She's a shell or a ghost. She's missing long before Kaylee Anthony goes missing.
Right, and your theory being, and it does sound logical to me, that Cindy Anthony kind of, like you said, sucked the emotional oxygen out of everybody there. Why? But let's face it, there's lots of people that grew up in orphanages, and they didn't raise children who raised children to be killers. I mean, what happens in these particular cases?
Well, you're now at the heart of what you learn as a psychiatrist, which is that everything matters. Every variable matters. That's why no one's life is anyone else's life. Some people go off to war. They return and run for United States Senate and win. Other people come back. They're plagued by voices and visions. All good people. But every variable, where were they? What did they experience? What had they experienced before? What kind of support did they have before and after? What was their neurochemistry like before, then after? Similarly, in families and in life. Had Casey Anthony been born not attractive, she might not have stumbled on men as a kind of drug. That prevented her from finding her inner self rather than encouraged her to do so. Had she had one parent who recognized her as a person rather than two who did not, George and Cindy, perhaps mm-hmm. she would have been spared this. Had she had a grandparent who was able to find her inner self with her, perhaps that would have been a sufficient dose of something healing to prevent this terrible story from unfolding. In these cases, you don't find any light. Similarly with Scott Peterson, it's an accident of darkness. Too much darkness, too little light. And in those cases, this kind of thing can happen.
I think there might be a misunderstanding about your book. Several people have asked me to ask you, are you making excuses for Casey? Are you saying she's not to be held accountable for her behavior, that this wasn't her fault?
Not at all. You know, and that's, you know, I don't understand people who defend not looking at things because what you find might explain them. That doesn't excuse them.
Right.
People
there's a big difference.
People can still make their own decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. It's a big difference. In other words, look, I believe at various moments in her life, Casey Anthony made choices, and they weren't laudable. And, of course, she's responsible. At minimum, she didn't report her daughter missing for over a month. It's reprehensible. It's unspeakable. But to leave it at that and just call it, oh, it's evil, that leaves us nowhere. It leaves us with a label. Let's look back and find out the trajectory of those shortcomings. Let's explain it so that we can understand it. I'll tell you, if the prosecutor in this case had understood Casey Anthony, he may have put forward a more compelling story for the jury. He may have actually told them something that resonated like the truth. Like, hey, maybe this was a mercy killing. Maybe it's not murder one. Maybe it was a mercy killing, misdirected, misguided, evil, if you will, but taking her daughter off the planet so that she would not bear the same kind of torture at Hope Spring Drive that Casey Anthony had borne.
That's a very interesting way to look at it. I do want to talk to you about George Anthony because that is one of our most controversial topics in this case. But first, you have come up with something very interesting, and it's called identity suppression syndrome, which is basically what we've been talking about. Now, is that something that you've come up with, or is the American Psychiatric Association, is that something they recognize? What is that?
I coined the term because nothing in our recipe book, right, I'm looking at it right now on my shelf, the DSM-4-TR, which is our, you know, list of 300 disorders arrived at by committee at the American Psychiatric Association, really captures Casey Anthony. I don't think she's a sociopath, pure and simple. By the way, I didn't interview her, so I won't give her a diagnosis anyhow. But I will say this, there ought to be a category that applies to those people who are so out of touch with self, so intent on feeling no genuine emotions that they are horribly free to do very bad things because they don't feel the emotions of others. They are as if people. They are false, masquerading people in the world, and they're not your standard sociopath. Standard sociopaths don't take you to a workplace where they say that they work, as Casey did. She brought police to Universal Studios as though she worked there and walked them down the hall to take them to her office, which didn't exist. That's not a very smart lie. That doesn't sound like somebody that Sherlock Holmes is going to have to out as a killer or as somebody who's lying compulsively. This is someone who can walk through life imitating other people, not in touch with herself at all, not moved by lies. And it's not because of overt evil intent. It's because she's completely severed from her real self. Identity suppression syndrome. It's sustained by and empowered by and strengthened by, and we should be greatly concerned about this, social media, where you can create a profile. It doesn't have to be you. In fact, it can be used to keep people at bay, because if you instant message people enough, you never have to talk to them. And if you put up enough photos of yourself that look happy, you can pretend you are. And lots of your quote-unquote friends on Facebook will respond to you as though you're a happy soul when you could be miserable and hiding.
But you know what? It sounds like to me, and I'm certainly not the expert here, but it just sounds like a sociopath, like maybe a sociopath plus, you know, plus-size sociopath of what you're describing of Casey Anthony. Yeah, that was really dumb. But wouldn't a sociopath carry out a lie like that, you know, walking to Universal Studios, hoping that something happens? Or no,
you know,
not?
And you know, I think the thing is you've got to look for secondary gain. The sociopaths I've evaluated, most of their sociopathy is directed towards secondary gain. It doesn't exist in a vacuum where people are abiding it. You know, in Ireland...
What do you mean
people,
by secondary gain? What do you mean?
Well, what I mean is that, you know, they're stealing things or they're getting jobs by fixing their resumes. Casey Anthony really didn't get anything by saying, I have a nanny and I have a job. She had no job. She had no nanny. Her friend knew this, but didn't confront her with it because they felt, you know, she's pretty and she's warm toward us and she seems caring enough. Why, like, throw it up in her face?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
So
that's essentially what, you know, I think there's a very big difference between the kind of planning that a sociopath does in order to get things and somebody who's wandered free from the reality of who she is and seems much more like a jumper. You know, she loved this movie, Jumper.
Mm-hmm.
She seems much more that way to me as somebody who has broken free from her real identity, most of the time not for secondary gain, not to steal anything usually, but simply to avoid the truth of who she is. That's the primary motivator. And that's not true for sociopaths.
Is it partially true for sociopaths? I mean, I guess what I'm trying to say is, are you saying she is not a sociopath and is now in this new category, in your opinion?
Well, that's why I coined the term. I don't find her to meet the criteria, nor did other forensic psychiatrists, at least the one who posted his report, in this case, didn't see her qualifying for a diagnosis of sociopathic, you know, antisocial personality disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And so, repeated brushes with the law. Not really.
Mm-hmm.
That would be one of the characteristics of a sociopath. Girl's got no record.
Right. Dr. Abloh, we have one question, and then I do want to get to the George Anthony topic here. This is from one of our members at the lake. And at the lake, welcome to Web Sleuths Radio. You have a question for Dr. Keith Abloh.
Hi.
Go for it, my dear. You are on the air.
Yes. I was wondering, as far as your interpretation of the family in Texas who, before the verdict, probably 4 months before, I don't know the time frame exactly right off the cuff. Thank you for being with us, by the way.
Thanks for saying so.
It was apparently cousins of Cindy's, I believe, in Texas. I don't know how they were related to Shirley. But how do you feel as though they impacted and were involved in being brought into this? Are you aware of what I'm referring to as to when, before the verdict, they said, when it's all over, you will know, and they were ready to come up with Casey and the story perhaps that they knew?
I don't know what you're referring to.
It was just some of Cindy's relatives who said they were going to come forward with the truth, and then we never heard anything. Never heard
anything. Yeah, that's probably why I didn't follow it. But, I don't know. You know, I've talked with lots of Cindy's relatives. Most importantly, her brother Rick, I think most importantly, because he was beside himself trying to understand why his sister would be so averse to seeing reality. He didn't have the calculus sort of to understand her with, but she is averse to seeing anything genuine unfolding around her, particularly when it defines another person as a separate individual. So her daughter being pregnant 7 months, she didn't know, for instance, and I believe her.
That's just so bizarre. At the lake, thank you very much. I've put you back on hold so you can listen. Okay, Dr. Abloh, we've got to discuss this, okay? I've got to be very honest with you. You and Casey Anthony's defense team are about the only ones who seem to believe George molested Casey. Now, one of the worst things in the world is a child molester. I think we can all agree on that. To me, one of the second worst things in the world is an innocent person accused of child molestation. That's why, in my opinion, we have to have at least some evidence of the person in question being a molester. Now, Dr. Abloh, as much as I loved your first book and as fascinating as I find inside the mind of Casey Anthony, you know what I'm leading up to, I'm very, very, very troubled by your accusations against George.
I never say that George abused Casey.
Well,
in
but
the book.
Okay. Well, here's something that you said. You said one thing about George, he always liked the idea of being around children. That was just kind of a creepy. To me, you were saying, wink, wink, he's kind of creepy. And here's the thing. Casey didn't even say anything about this molestation, and we know people don't, until it fit her needs. She lies about everything. And why in the world would you believe this one thing out of all of the stuff? This is the most horrendous thing she could say. There's no evidence to back it up. And so to put this in a book,
maybe
you don't come right out and say it, but you're kind of right.
No,
there.
All I do in the book is I give people the same insight. That's what the book's meant to do. It's meant to bring you the same insight that a forensic psychiatrist would have mm-hmm. upon hearing the stories of these folks. And so all I'd say is the following. Casey Anthony may be lying yet again about having been sexually abused. Certainly Jeff Ashton would say that she was completely lying, the prosecutor. Mm-hmm. However, it happens to be the case that the way she reports this, the words she uses, the memories she summons, are precisely of a tone, quality, and content as those I hear from patients who have no dog in the hunt, nothing to gain, who are simply relating to me having been sexually abused. So I can't discount that. That sounds, important to me, that it doesn't sound contrived. I mean, she'd have to have, I don't know. I mean, for a girl who otherwise is totally unbelievable at most times, most of the things she says are preposterous. I work here, here's my office, but she doesn't. For her to say, I have this feeling in my body as well as a sense of like, I'm not quite sure, maybe my dad touched me. Well, I think maybe he did. And the rest of it, it's the kind of evolution that patients relate. In addition to that, and again, I'm not saying if he did it, but it's striking to me that the man's at the foot of his daughter's bed when she delivers Kaylee Anthony. Mm-hmm. I think that that's very bizarre. And I think it's further bizarre, not only that he saw his daughter's naked body and was content to stay at the foot of the bed, but that he then describes it to law enforcement officials as, he says, there are things you see on your little girl that you don't want to see all grown up. Well, here's a newsflash. Women's private parts aren't stuck to their bodies like Play-Doh. They're not on their bodies. They're part of their bodies. And they don't grow up. They're not independent beings dancing around. I think it's bizarre that George Anthony, when questioned by police about Zenaida Gonzalez, the fake nanny, and they asked him, can you give us any of her characteristics? And his response is, you mean like on a scale of 1 to 10? Well, no, George, we don't mean that at all. Finally, I guess, and most importantly, everybody's saying, how is it possible? How is it possible that Casey Anthony could go dancing when at minimum her daughter is missing for weeks? And how could she win a hot body contest? How does a woman do that? Well, there has to be an answer. I'm not in the business of no answers. That's just mm-hmm. baloney. People who say it can't be explained just haven't looked. Well, I'm not saying it happened, but say if you were, say, in fourth grade, performing oral sex on your dad before going to school to play Foursquare and take a math test and pretend that you care about Foursquare and the math test and maybe even do care. Well, that would be exactly the kind of environment that would teach you to be able to go out dancing after your daughter goes missing.
How did you find out that George was at the foot of the bed when Kaylee was delivered? I haven't heard that before.
He told law enforcement authorities that, and he said he found it tremendously moving.
He did.
He also,
okay.
when he's present for the ultrasound, they say, "What did you think about the ultrasound of Kaylee?" And mm-hmm. he says, "Well, mostly I remember the hamburger sign." Well, the hamburger sign is a crass term that ultrasound technicians use to speak of the vagina, since it resembles the buns, they say, of a hamburger on the ultrasound.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it wasn't the movement, it wasn't the heart, it wasn't how it looks human. No, George Anthony remembers the vagina. George Anthony's at the foot of the bed when Casey Anthony delivers her child, looking at her vagina. George Anthony, when asked about the fake nanny, doesn't say she has dark hair and brown eyes. He says, do you mean on a scale of 1 to 10? And George Anthony, according to his first wife, wanted to be a dress-up character at Disney.
Yeah, I read that. I was wondering if he was just kidding when he said that. I didn't take that seriously. Did she really seriously say he wanted to be a dress-up character at Disney?
Yes. Well, she
really?
Said that he was a cop and that she feared whether he'd ever be able to make money again since he was barely that. And so when he said, I want to move to Orlando, she said, well, you know, are you going to secure a job with the local police first? And he said, no, you know, my dream here is to be a character at Disney World, like, you know, Pluto or something.
If you could, you know, it's...
Hey, here's the thing. Okay. This guy found his daughter's car, okay?
Right.
It had been towed 2 weeks before. He thought his daughter was driving around Florida. But the tow yard said, no, we brought it here 2 weeks ago. So there his granddaughter's been missing. His daughter has been obviously lying. He approaches the car, which he smells like rotting flesh. And the
terrible.
Next thing he does after he drives the car home is goes to work for about $10 an hour as a security guard.
This guy is terrible.
Out of this world crazy.
Yeah, I believe me, I don't want to give the impression I'm a defender of George Anthony, not in any way, shape, or form. That, when I read that, absolutely horrified me.
Look, I don't know what George Anthony did or didn't do. I was not in that house. But if you tell me, I know a man who went to work for $10 an hour after he found a car that smelled like it might have contained his granddaughter's corpse at one time. And then you say, now, is that the kind of person who could force himself on a little girl? I'd say, well, yeah, it's a person without feeling. So, yeah.
Well, just a couple of quick things here. Let's get back to the ultrasound.
Jeff Ashton bought it lock, stock, and barrel. He swallowed the bait like a minnow. That's why he couldn't get the conviction, because he didn't see the story. He thought her psychology was irrelevant, that she was just a killer. No, she's also a victim. You don't get it.
Right. And I know you're not saying that to excuse her. I know that. I want everybody to calm down. Dr. Avlo's not saying this is excusable. Not at all. I understand what you're saying, but isn't it possible that the reason why George Anthony was in the delivery room is because that's what Cindy wanted, you know? And second part of the question, is there anything in George's background, in George's family, in anything that you have seen that would even hint that this is a possibility?
Well, other than a childhood prank where, you know, multiple sources had said that he stole someone's underwear, and that could be a childhood prank.
Mm-hmm.
Look, I've already presented the facts that I think are interesting. People can judge from them, you know, what they will. You know, while people may still believe, and this may be a case of it, by the way, that most allegations of sexual abuse are baloney, you know, we still get Syracuse to look at in Penn State.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact is most parents don't get accused of forcing their penises into their daughters' mouths. That just doesn't happen that often. So if you're accused, then someone would say, you know, the best thing would be if you were able to say, me? That's so not me. Well, okay, but you are the guy who picked up your car. You said that there was a rotted corpse, maybe of your granddaughter in it, and then you went to make $10 an hour. Now, you are a bizarre fellow after all. I'm not saying he did it, by the way. Might not have done it. I'm just saying you couldn't, based on the other facts in this case, just say, well, there's no way, because from a psychological perspective, he's beyond connected to the feelings of others. He's beyond not connected to the feelings of others.
And I understand what you're saying. I just think that Casey is such a
liar. And now there's a little girl dead because of the way they raised their daughter. Their granddaughter is dead, and she didn't have to die, and they didn't have to suffocate everyone in the family just because they couldn't bear to sit with a psychiatrist and get to their own demons.
So they
should be on trial, too.
Well, I understand what you're saying. They created Casey, and you're right. They did. I believe that Cindy did suffocate her. I don't know. If there would have been anything else that pointed to that other than Casey saying it, it's such a horrible allegation to make.
I'm not saying he did it. I want to be clear about that. I'm just saying that if you're a psychiatrist and you're tasked with, let's say he's not involved, you just get Casey in your office and she's a known liar, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she says in the privacy of your office, my dad forced me to have oral sex with him many mornings before school. you then say to yourself, am I thinking that she's trying to manipulate me? Or is there any meat to the story here? And if you knew other things about the man, like if you called the wife and said, I'm just trying to check this out. Was your husband looking at your daughter naked with her legs spread when she gave birth from the foot of the bed? And if she said yes, you know, the chills would go up your spine. And you'd say, okay, all right, very good. And, you know, you'd sit a little differently in your chair for the next session with Casey Anthony.
I don't know. This is one, you know, I agree with you on a lot of things, but this I just have to disagree on. And I see George as somebody who has been under Cindy's thumb and who just is.
Not so
like,
much that he couldn't go and get, you know, oral sex from another woman during the investigation, for his granddaughter. Did you find her not credible either?
No, I find her very credible.
So what's he doing getting oral sex during an investigation, watching his daughter give birth from the foot of the bed, describing the ultrasound largely in terms of an unborn female's vagina, describing his daughter as a vagina all grown up, and you think that that's, I mean, do you know a lot of people like that?
Well, no, and I am not suggesting in any way, shape,
or form. Would you let him babysit your granddaughter or your daughter?
Well, if I knew all of that, probably not. I wouldn't actually.
Why not?
You just said
you can't believe it.
Well, I can't.
Why not? Why wouldn't you let him babysit your granddaughter or daughter?
Well, because he makes.
You're probably
bad
too young for a granddaughter, but why wouldn't you?
Because he makes bad choices, not because he's a sexual abuser, but because he makes bad choices.
Now, you're not being honest.
No,
you're
I am
not
being honest.
Absolutely. No, you're not.
I just do not think he abused Casey. I think he's
weird.
Well,
do you have a pool? Do you have a pool?
A pool? No, I do not.
Okay, so your child would be relatively safe, babysat by George Anthony. After all, he did it for Kaylee most days for 3 years. I mean, the chances of anything happening that one night, you'd have to say, very low. So you're game, right?
Well, now let me just say, I'm not saying I wouldn't.
Let's be honest. You're posting video cameras all over your house if you're leaving that kid alone with George Anthony.
But
so you're not being honest. I don't know if you're worried about being sued or what. What is it?
No. I'm not worried about being sued. Oh, believe me, Dr. Ablo, you should hear some of the stuff I've said. I could care.
I know. I feel so comfortable with you that I like pressing you. I know it's good radio, too, but.
I love it. Press me. I mean, go after me. I love it because I'm
here. I don't know. Look, here's the thing. I got ahead of steam as I wrote this book. I'm not saying the guy's a sexual predator. I'm really not. I swear I'm not. I just feel like somebody's got to say that, well, it doesn't excuse anything.
Mm-hmm.
That if you think that Casey Anthony emerged on the planet, like born the bad seed, I would say to people who believe that, that's tremendously naive. And mm-hmm. When Cindy Anthony and George sold pictures of Kaylee for $20,000, when they patented her name, these are not normal people.
Mm-hmm.
These aren't the people next door.
Well, and I can't argue with that. But I am just saying, as far as letting George Anthony babysit, the only reason why I wouldn't has nothing to do with any sort of sexual abuse, because I don't believe he did anything like that at all. I think he is a very troubled, deeply troubled man. And to me, Cindy is kind of the keeper of the gate in that house. But I also think when it comes right down to it, the person truly responsible is Casey. You know, I mean, yes, Cindy and George created this atmosphere, but you do have to kind of say, you know, Casey was the one who really, really did it. But again, I agree that we need to look at everything, because if we don't, then we don't understand, we don't find answers, and we don't find a way to prevent it. And like in the Scott Peterson case, if you go back and read that book, Inside the Mind of Scott Peterson, it was fascinating how Jackie truly did suffocate Scott and create this person went along and thought he could kill somebody and do whatever he wanted because he was the golden boy.
Well, you know, there are these chilling similarities. Like Jackie, you'll remember when her daughter finds her,
mm-hmm.
it's Scott Peterson's sister, finds her. This is the biological mother who gave her up for adoption. And she's shopping in her used whatever, antique store kind of used thing, picks up a piece of needlepoint. She says, you know, maybe I'll get this to remember having met you today. First day they've ever met.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, you know what? I'm going to take 10% off.
Right.
That's the same moment as George and Cindy Anthony at the tow yard where their daughter's car was towed, the one smelling of dead flesh, where they spend an hour arguing about the price of the tow. An hour.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've got two psychological killers raising a daughter whose own daughter goes missing. Casey Anthony is really no different than Charles Manson, who told us from the stand, you can't kill me. I'm already dead.
Already dead. I think about that a lot, and I think that's something right here. I do believe that Casey Anthony was already dead and had been dead emotionally for most of her life. A lot of people want to know.
Yes.
This final thing. And believe me, Dr. Abloh, you know how much I love your books. And
it's my best interview so far.
Oh, great. Oh, God, that makes me feel good. Hey, I'll
I'm
pay you later.
I'm telling you.
Man.
No, it's like I feel like I'm with another psychoanalyst forensic fellow here. So it's good.
Well, thank you very much. It's because I am crazy. I just hide it very well. So anyway, you didn't interview Casey Anthony in this book, obviously. In the Peterson case, you did interview Lee Peterson, Scott's father.
Right.
You did interview Rick. How do you feel about writing this book and saying all of this without interviewing the case players mostly connected to the case? It's a question that people are wanting me to ask you.
That's a great question. I interviewed her boyfriend. I interviewed her close friends. I interviewed her relatives. I interviewed friends of her grandparents, neighbors of the family when she was growing up. I went through thousands and thousands of pages, including the transcripts of this case in court, legal interviews with law enforcement. So I didn't feel that there was a poverty of information. I felt overwhelmed with a wealth of information. So I'd get, you know, because of the Florida Sunshine Laws, I had access to the whole police investigation. And so while it would have been nice to talk to George and Cindy and Casey, the truth is that the way in which they're talking to law enforcement, the way in which I could review their emails, their instant messages, Facebook profiles, talk to so many friends of theirs, it's plenty. It's so much less than FBI profilers have who have to come up with profiles of serial killers they've never met. It's so much more, than that. It's so much more than CIA profilers have of foreign leaders whom they can never interview or terrorists whom they'll never interview. So this is an art, not a science, I'll grant that. But when the dominoes all line up with the edges flush so they look like one domino and you could push it and the whole line falls with not a domino angled incorrectly, you get a feeling in your gut like this is the story. So I always look for the domino that doesn't line up. I'm like, okay, well, when I was talking to her boyfriends and they're like, I was like, how was she with you? Well, after sex, she wants to get dressed and get out, always, right away. No talk. I'm like, okay, well, there's a woman who does not want intimacy. She wants to know that she has you, and then she's dressed and out of the room before you can lose that sexual attraction and want to talk to her as a person. It all fit,
Right. I see what you're saying. Tell me, on your website, I read this, but I want to make sure that I get it correct. What are your qualifications? You have a doctorate from?
My undergrad is from Brown University, where I got majored in neurosciences, and then I went on to Johns Hopkins Medical School. I completed my MD at Johns Hopkins, then my psychiatry residency at New England Medical Center in Boston, and then I became board certified in adult, adolescent, and forensic psychiatry, and I'm now an assistant professor at New England Medical Center in Boston, or Tufts Medical School, essentially.
Fantastic.
And so, I've testified in a lot of murder cases and so forth. So this is my, I poured into this, and I really, really, really agonized to make sure that the story felt like what it was shaping up to, and that's what I related to readers. You know, they can agree or disagree. We'll all part friends.
There you go. Well, I'll tell you what. I need to have you back on the show because if you thought our conversation about George was interesting, I need to talk to you about transgender people. So. How about that?
Hey,
can we do that sometime?
I would be more than happy to. And so who would you rather have babysit, Casey or George?
A George, by far. In a heartbeat. In a heartbeat over Casey.
He'd do it for less money, I'll tell you that. He'd do it for less money. All right.
Hey, thank you,
Dr. Aplow.
I appreciate it. And I will have you back on to talk about Chaz Bono and that whole situation because we need to get into that, okay?
I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, thank you, Doctor.
You
take
will.
Care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, there you go, Dr. Keith Aplow. I can see the people in our chat room are a little upset. Guys, don't worry. It's okay. I totally disagree with him about George Anthony. In fact, it really upsets me because I think that's just awful to accuse someone of that. When the only person accusing him is an absolute known habitual liar. But I think it's important, everybody, the other things that Dr. Aplow says about researching and learning from the past. There's a quote, and I wish I could remember it. It's something like, I don't know what my future holds, but my past is laid in front of me for everyone to see. In other words, you know, we just keep repeating our past. And if we don't learn about those types of situations where children are ripped from their parents' arms and they have to develop all of these emotional tools to stop from, getting hurt again, and then they pass along those types of tools to their kids and their kids, and it just snowballs out of control. There's nothing wrong with learning information. That isn't taking away from personal responsibility. Casey Anthony is the one who killed Kaylee. End of story. You have to ask, though, would she have killed if her parents, you know, had been perhaps a little different? We don't know the answer to that. And that's what I find fascinating about these cases and why I want to hear different viewpoints. And don't worry, guys, I've been in radio for years. I have talked to Ozzy Osbourne on the air before when he was drunk, so I can handle anybody. In fact, when I was talking to him, I bit the head off a bat just to mess with him. It was an amazing interview. Okay. Let's move on now. You guys are going to love this. Do not go anywhere. You are going to be so impressed with these young people, and I am so proud that they are a part of Web Sleuths. Okay? Let's welcome Allie to the show. Allie, are you with us? Oh, I guess I better put Allie on the air, huh? That's my job. Sorry. There we go. Allie, are you there, my dear?
Yes. Hi.
Okay. Hi. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. And Allie is a very incredible young lady. Allie, is your dad with us, or is it just you tonight?
Yes, he is.
Yeah, I'm on the line.
Good. And this is Ivan?
Yes.
Ivan, hi, welcome, and thank you for joining us. I want to tell you publicly that you have such a wonderful daughter, and I am so impressed with what you're all doing for one of our cold cases.
She told me to keep quiet, and I let her do the talking.
Ah, okay. Well, Dad, I'll make sure you don't interrupt, okay? I have control here. I'll mute you if I have to, Dad. Okay. We received an email from Allie asking for our help on Web Sleuths with a cold case. On Sunday, August 14th, 2005, 18-year-old Shelley Carson's body was found under a tree. Her death has been ruled a homicide and has since gone cold. Now, Allie, you have put together something called Justice for Shelley.
Yes.
Tell us first about Justice for Shelley, what it involves, who it involves, and what you're doing, and then we're going to get into the details of the case.
Okay. In May of 2011, I got a group of my 15 closest friends to do a student group for Shelley Carson. And I got involved in 2009 with my dad because I had lost a half-brother in a car accident, and he was 18, and kind of it was similar to teenage death to the Carsons, but my dad had closure because he found out what happened in the car accident, and the Carsons don't have closure, so I kind of wanted to do something for them. So in 2009, we raised money to help do a newspaper ad, but nothing really happened there, and I decided I wanted to take things more into my own hands and kind of step it up. So
mm-hmm.
my student group is here to kind of explore new and different avenues rather than the newspaper ads to promote Shelley Carson's murders reward and try to get anyone who knows anything to kind of pass along their tips and things like that.
Well, that is so incredibly admirable for what you're doing, because let's face it, you know, most young kids today are, you know, just concerned with their music and their friends,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, similar to, say, oh, my 15-year-old boy, you know, it's, I get that teenagers have a lot of other stuff going on for it, so for you to take the time to do this for Shelley Carson is just amazing. Now, let's talk about Shelley's case. Why don't you tell us what you know about the case so far?
Okay. We know on August 14th, he was found at 6 in the morning, brutally murdered in the front of someone's lawn just a mile from her home. And what we do know through surveillance cameras at a 7-Eleven that she was at the 7-Eleven hanging out with friends until about 3-ish in the morning, and then she left, and then she was found dead at 6 in the morning.
And that's all we know? Did she have a boyfriend that was mad at her, or what do we know?
My dad would like to talk about that.
Yeah.
Okay, Dad, I'll let
him
talk.
A boyfriend, and they had a fight that night,
mm-hmm.
and she was over his house, and she got so upset, I think she threw the ring at him, and they were engaged at the time. And she took the bike that she kept at his house and drove home. Then about an hour and a half later, he came over to the house. They ostensibly made up. And then she came in. She spoke to Bill Carson. Bill Carson gave her a stern warning for being home so late. And it was about 11:30 at the time. So he thought that she went to bed. But what happened is she went to bed, and then she came out later. Either she called somebody, there's different stories. But anyway, she ended up at the 7-Eleven because she wanted to get some cigarettes. And one of her either friends or an ex-boyfriend was working there. And she spent a number of hours there. And I think it was 4 o'clock in the morning that he walked out with her. She got on the bike. Now, there's two different stories to this.
Mm-hmm.
She went out. He went with her. Bill Carson told me that he walked down about a block with her and then returned to the 7-Eleven. There was somebody else working with him there, two working. And then she took off, and she was last seen about 6:09 in the morning when some Good Samaritan saw the body laying there and tried to revive her, and then immediately called the police, and the police were called, and then it started the investigation.
Does the boyfriend have an alibi? Have the police cleared him?
That I don't know. And you
got
to understand one thing. We give some tips to the police, and they're very cordial to us and all that. They say, we'll investigate, and thank you very much. And that's all we ever hear. That's all Bill ever hears. So we never get any feedback from the police.
Well, that's understandable. And you know, I think we all understand why that is.
And
it is frustrating.
Yeah.
It is very, very frustrating. Allie, what do you and your group want to accomplish by coming on to Web Sleuths? First of all, before you answer that, you will all be posting under one name of Clark Kent. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
So I want to let our members know and our listeners know that if you see Clark Kent posting, that is a collective group. It may be Ivan, it may be Allie, it may be somebody else in the group, but they're all going to post. And that way, and this is a very good idea, Ivan is the adult supervisor. He can make sure that, you know, everything is going well, because we have kids on the internet and you have to be careful no matter where you're at. So Clark Kent is your username. What are you going to do with Web Sleuths? What do you want to try and do?
Well, we've already passed out flyers in the Kings Grant neighborhood encouraging the community and especially that neighborhood to get involved. We're just looking for just more participation, more discussion on the case. If anyone can remember anything, what Shelley was like, any possible tips or anything that could help.
You know, Allie, and let me tell you, you've come to the right place, because the people at Web Sleuths, they are like a dog with a bone. Once they get a hold of it, they will not let go. What we've done is we have created a Justice for Shelley forum specifically for this case, and it's on our featured cases, so you can find it very easily. If you go to websleuths.com/forums and just scroll down, and you'll see it's in the same area as the Lisa Irwin case and the Kyron Horman case, and you'll see Justice for Shelley. And we're just starting it. Right now it's just one thread. It's the thread that everybody's been using for the past 2 years discussing the case. But we will be adding pictures. We will be adding everything we can find. And there also is a website. Why don't you tell us about the website?
Our website is www.justiceforshelley.com, and it has everything that you would want to know about our student group, about Shelley, about how to help. We have a direct link to Web Sleuths thread, so to make it easy for people just to look at it. We have our Facebook and our Twitter and our address to donate. So we have, like, a lot of information in that, so it's really helpful.
That is so wonderful. Well, you have the full support of Web Sleuths and our 40,000-plus members. We will do our best to help you in any way we can. What we'll be doing here during in the next week is we'll be sending out a press release locally to all the stations saying that Web Sleuths has joined with Justice for Shelley, and I am confident that that will get you more publicity, because that's what's needed. There's somebody out there. There's somebody that knows something. I'm not talking about the killer, but there's somebody that knows that perhaps, you know, there's just a funny feeling that they have, or something is not sitting right with a story that somebody is telling them. We just need to get that person to come forward and contact the police. And let's get justice for Shelley, because she certainly deserves it. And thank God that Shelley and her family have you on their side, and your ability to help is just amazing. Ivan, once again, what a great group of kids. And we're here to help any way we can. Ivan and Allie. Thank you, and thank you for Justice for Shelley. We'll be checking in with you regularly on Web Sleuths Radio and getting more and more updates, okay?
Thank you very much.
Good night. Thank you so much for calling.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, you know, the people in the chat room on Web Sleuths Radio were so upset with Dr. Abloh. You know, and I really disagree, especially with his transgender, you know, thing. He said that by watching Chaz Bono on Dancing with the Stars, it might turn your kids, it might make your kids transgender. I mean, it was just ridiculous. And I have got to talk to him about that, because that really made me angry. But I wanted to keep it on focus on tonight. I think there's a lot of good, very interesting things in the book. I don't agree with the George Anthony thing, and that was one of the main topics I wanted to get to. And I was glad he stayed an extra 15 minutes. I didn't know how he would react to that, and I actually was quite pleased with how he reacted, and I want him to push me, because I push back. Okay, I am going to go to area code at the lake. Hang on, I'll get with you in just a minute. This is area code 650. Are you there? Area code 650? Hello? If you're on the phone, say hello. Hello? Okay, I don't think they're listening. Okay, at the lake, are you there, my dear? Oh, hold on.
How are you?
There we go. We got you. I'm good. Okay. I wish Ann from Texas would call, because Ann is talking about the foot of the bed thing, and I need to find that exactly so I can send it to Dr. Abloh and say, look, he never said this. I am wondering if Dr. Abloh is saying, and I hate to put words in his mouth, but I wonder if he's saying that George was saying he watched the birth and he didn't like watching you know, the privates of his daughter, which would lead a person to believe he was at the end of the bed. I'm wondering if that's what this was. But, okay, at the lake, what are your thoughts? Go ahead. Let's hear it.
Well, I've never had a child, so I've never gone through a childbirth.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the bed, I think maybe he may have been misinterpreted. As far as there is a doctor at the end of the bed, that doesn't happen. So that hole at the bed is getting blown up, and I think it's getting. I just think that there's something being interpreted from that.
Well,
and so many of his interpretations, I just don't agree with.
Now, well, let me tell you, when I gave birth, I only gave birth once. I had four people at the foot of my bed. I had my husband and my girlfriend who were placing bets to see how high my, the meter, you know, I had a spinal tap. So my contractions, they were registered on a meter. They were placing bets to see how high the next contraction would be. That's the type of love and warmth I had while I was giving birth. But I had four people at the bottom of my bed, a doctor, a nurse, my friend, and my husband. And they were there. They were all there watching. Now, they weren't real close. You know, they were kind of back. So I think that's possible, but I just don't think it's, that big of a deal.
I don't either. I don't
yeah,
either.
I just don't.
I'm trying to say.
I just don't. Okay, hang tight. I need to change direction here. Kimster, you just texted me. What's going on? We have a cold case that we have an update on?
Yes, there is a just got this on the on my flash information on the I'm getting a text too. There is a woman that went missing in 1993 who has been found alive. And on Web Sleuth's Resource Center, there is a thread about these cold case cards. I found out about them when I spoke with the Lane County Sheriff's Department in Oregon. They have cold case cards. Anyway, I found out, I found out there's a lot of them over the United States, and the state of Washington also has cold case playing cards. This discovery came through the cold case deck of cards that somebody got a hold of them, and she contacted law enforcement. Her name is Judith Bellow. She
mm-hmm.
went missing in 1993. Come to find out, she left because of an abuse situation, a domestic abuse situation. She hid from everybody until now.
Wow.
So there is always hope for those
there
who
is.
Are missing.
And
their families. And I'm really excited about this case. I don't even know that Judith's case has a thread on Web Sleuth. I wouldn't be surprised if she didn't. We have so many. But
mm-hmm.
but if you're not familiar with the playing cards, find out if there's a deck available in your area. Any if you go to buy a deck, I think the ones in Lane County, Oregon, were $5 a deck or something. The money goes to those who are working on unidentified remains and missing cold case people.
Well, that is great news, and I will always stop any Web Sleuth radio program to get news like that. Thank goodness. We needed some good news because usually it's just the opposite. So, well, I hope that that woman has – what is her name again, Kim?
Her name is Judith Bellows. She lives somewhere in California. She's alive and well in California. And actually this alert that I got in my email while we were on the air came from the Huffington Post.
Oh, I love the Huffington Post. Well, I hope Judith is doing okay. I'm glad she came forward because it does give hope to other people. And I hope she has her life together, and I hope she's safe. I hope she feels safe at least. Okay, let's get back to George and Cindy here and the chat room. At the lake, you're on the line here, and we have people in the chat room. Here's what I think. This is what I tried to get across to the doctor. I just think that George did what Cindy told him. And I think he probably stood there, like somebody said, like Lone Traveler said, stood wherever Cindy told him to stand. And I think that's what George does, don't you think, at the lake?
I don't think it's anything to be concerned
well,
about.
I don't either.
I don't either.
I
don't think it's concernable at all.
I don't. I mean, and the thing is, Dr. Abloh was bringing up all the weird things George did. And, yeah, he did do weird things, but none of them lead back to sexual abuse. You know, that's the thing. If any of them would lead back, no, they just lead to somebody who's dead inside, who, to me, has been, you know, chopped down bit by bit by Cindy. And that's how I view it. And, you know, granted.
Well, I was very offended when he took it to say, was your husband looking at your daughter's inner thighs? I mean,
yeah.
I wrote that down. I wrote a few quotes down. And to me, he took things just very out of context.
I don't either. And it bothers me. And one thing I want to talk to him about, which I didn't get a chance to tonight, is how he has changed a little bit, I think, since he's been on Fox News. And I don't know if that has anything to do with it or not. It might. But I was glad to hear him, get up in there with me. I liked that a lot. That made me feel real comfortable, and I'm glad he's comfortable because I really want to talk to him about some other stuff because he does have some really good, interesting things to say, and I think it gets lost in this. You know, because George acted weird with the car and the, you know, the smell of decomposition and just going to work after that doesn't mean he abused his daughter. That's
Richard,
that's,
we're a country of laws.
Yes, exactly.
And all this psychological is very interesting. It is. I have a psychologist. I went to a Christmas party last night. We discussed it.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't obviate that we're a country of law.
Well, and I agree. I don't think that's what he was saying. I don't think he's saying that at all. And I'm not trying to defend him because he can certainly do that himself. We are a nation of laws, and it doesn't – you know what? At this point, it doesn't matter because Kaylee's dead, and Casey needed to pay for it, and she didn't. But what matters is the dynamic of the family, and we can learn from that. That's what I find interesting. That's why I was so interested in the Scott Peterson case because I'd never seen anybody like Jackie before. My God, she just – totally freaked me out more than anything. But anyway, okay, if anybody else wants to call in, we can chat a little bit more, or we can wrap it up for the night. It's whatever you want to do. Also, don't forget next week it will be good, everybody. We have Jeff Ashton. I'm actually going to do a pre-interview with Mr. Ashton before the next week sometime before the show, and he will be staying with us the full hour. And it's going to be a great show because I guarantee you guys know more about it, or as much probably as he does. And so he's going to be thrilled that he's talking to people that know the facts. So anyway, Dr. Keith Abloh, I think we'll have him on again, not in the near future, but soon, because like I said, there are issues I want to talk to him about. But there are some interesting things in his book, and especially the one about the Peterson case you would find very interesting. But some of his thoughts really, really trouble me, and I think add to a problem of hatred in this country when it comes to transgendered people. Anyway, okay, at the lake, thank you so much. Are you still there, my dear? Let's see. I got to get to my – there we go. At the lake, thank you.
And thank you so much, Tricia. And anything – that we, all the people that are with Web Sleuths can do to help you and let us know. I know that seeing that others have helped, like R0004 has helped,
mm-hmm.
And others, it's created a bar for us to try to reach to help you and reaching others to help others. So
thank you so much for all you do. Thank you. You guys are the ones that do all the work. And let's remember, justice for Shelley, okay? We need to go to that forum. Go to websleuths.com/forum, scroll down to the featured cases area, and you'll see justice for Shelley. We're going to start putting information up there, and we really – let's help these high school kids accomplish something. And they've already accomplished a lot by doing this, just by doing this. I mean, it's the first time anybody's approached us like this, and it's just so thrilling for us. So anyway, that's Justice for Shelley, justiceforshelley.com, and the Justice for Shelley forum on Web Sleuths. Kimster, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, did you like, we're getting ready to wrap it up here, did you like your new title? You are now the Corporate Security Liaison for Web Sleuths Radio.
Yes.
In
yes,
addition.
As a yes, that means if anybody gives me any hardship in the chat room, I can just boot them on out. Do you guys hear that in there?
That's right. Corporate Security Liaison. I love that. That just sounds so fancy for absolutely nothing. Okay, everybody.
Hey.
I'm sorry. Kimster, you know I love you. We couldn't do the show without you. Okay, kids, next week. Next week, it's former Anthony prosecutor Jeff Ashton. And also in the month of December, we are going to have an anniversary show with JonBenet Ramsey, and I'm really working on some very interesting guests that you will love. They better say yes or I'm going to be in big trouble. Web Sleuths Radio, it is, by the way, the legal stuff. The opinions expressed on the show are those of the guests of the host, and I take no responsibility for them, especially my own. Web Sleuths Radio is not the same as WebSleuths.com, which is a completely different corporate entity. So there. Web Sleuths Radio, where we discuss true crime, current events, and we always, always, always do it with common sense. Thanks so much, everybody. Good night.